WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin, and we've got a steaming hot show in the oven set and ready for you. All right, you do not want to touch that dial, as we will recap what the head coach of the MSU football team had to say, Coach Mark D'Antonio, of course, at Spartan Stadium. Of course, he held his morning presser to address the loss to Nebraska on Saturday night, as well as what his team's mindset is now moving forward as they will take on Maryland at home at Spartan Stadium this Saturday. So we have a ton of bites from Coach D. We'll also recap the Detroit Pistons as they fall to the Golden State Warriors on the road. The Warriors are now the only undefeated team in the NBA and are playing the best basketball out of anyone from here to Pluto. Unbelievable game last night, but the Pistons made it tight. We'll recap that. We'll also recap the MSU men's basketball team as they finish exhibition play with a win over Ferris State at the Breslin Center. We'll have a Friday night high school football roundup as we take a look at the upcoming regional matchups this Friday and recap and give you a synopsis of what local teams are still left in the hunt for a state championship. And also, Martha Ford addressed the Lions yesterday. Yeah, interesting stuff, folks. We'll take your calls as well all the way up until 2 p.m. If you got something on your sports noggin, call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this shindig like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this November 10th. All right, and we start with the Detroit Lions. Detroit Lions owner Martha Firestone Ford addressed the team yesterday during their regular team meeting. Now, according to several players, this was the first time ownership had ever addressed the players during their regular team meeting. She spoke for about 5 minutes, including the replacements for Martin Mayhew and Tom Luan, and told players in no certain terms that she expects the Lions to start playing better football. I like it. Tell them, Martha. Get on them. All right, Michigan State defeated the 2015 Great Lakes Intercollegiate Athletic Conference Tournament champion, Ferris State, 93-57 in the second of two exhibition matchups to start the 2015-16 season. Now, Michigan State combined for a 56.5 field goal percentage, including 42.9% from beyond the arc, as 13 of 15 Spartans scored in the contest. Senior Bryn Forbes led Michigan State's scoring charge for the second straight exhibition, shooting 4-for-7 from three-point range. Man, can he light it up from behind the arc or what? And scoring a game-high 16 points. Senior Denzel Valentine followed suit, so the two Lansing boys do their thing. Denzel Valentine tallied 15 points to go alongside his 7 assists and 7 rebounds. We'll have more from that game in just a sec. Ohio State quarterback JT Barrett. He will have to pay a $400 fine and will have his license suspended for 6 months after pleading guilty Tuesday to operating a vehicle under the influence. Now, in addition, the 20-year-old Barrett must complete a 3-day alcohol education program as a result of the misdemeanor stemming from his stop at a DUI checkpoint early on Halloween Day. Barrett must complete the class, and pay the fine by February 15th. That's his deadline, or he will face jail time. Judge H. William Pollitt said he accepted Barrett's plea. The Detroit Pistons, they fell to the reigning NBA champs, Golden State Warriors, last night, 109-95, the final of that one. The matchup showcased teams with two of the best records in the league, but the Pistons could not compete with the undefeated Warriors. Andre Drummond continued his double-double streak, putting up 14 points and 15 rebounds, making it his seventh straight game with a double-double. Oh, is Dre good or what? And the Detroit Red Wings, they will face the Washington Capitals today at home at 7:30 p.m. The Caps have proved to be one of the better teams in the East, allowing the fewest goals at only 25. This will also mark the first time Mike Green will play against the Capitals as a Red Wing. He was on the Washington team for over a decade. A theft from the International Boxing Hall of Fame Museum in New York has occurred. The theft took place on Thursday, November 5th at approximately 3 a.m. The family of Tony Zell, who is a dear friend here on Current Sports, they were notified of the burglary later that morning and were devastated to learn that Tony Zell's two championship belts displayed there since 1998 were indeed stolen. Carmen Basilio's four championship belts are also missing. I actually received an email not too long ago as the Zells are reaching out to anyone and everyone pleading that if you know any information concerning the theft, please let someone know. Former MLB pitcher Tommy Hansen has sadly passed away. Shocking news here. The Atlanta Braves confirmed that late last night. Hansen pitched 5 years in the majors, four with the Braves, and one with the Los Angeles Angels in 2013 following a trade. He was only, get this, 29 years old. Hansen had been in a coma, according to multiple reports. A source told that to WSB-TV, the ABC affiliate in Atlanta, that Hansen had trouble breathing early on Sunday morning and was taken to a hospital. He suffered catastrophic organ failure. Multiple sources told that to WSB-TV. Sad news, hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to the Hansen family. Well, that wraps up your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that is on your sports noggin, you know that number. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also like us on social media at facebook.com/currentsports. If you leave us a comment there, I will read it live here on our airwaves, or you can even tweet us at either Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR_sports. Without further ado, let's start the show.
Speaks to the power of football. There's no question about that. I think we're in a different time in society with social media and all the different things, and it's just a different time. So I think people have power and power of the media and different things, and I'm not sure really all the ramifications there. I don't have a lot of knowledge of all the things, but obviously, you know, a statement was made.
Hey, good people. Welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, November 10th, 2015. I really hope that you all out there are having a fantastic start to your week. It's been a busy one the past 2 days here on the show. Of course, this morning, head coach of the MSU football team, Mark D'Antonio, he addressed the media to, of course, recap what has gone down emotionally through the minds and the overall feelings from the entire personnel of Michigan State football after that heartbreaking loss on Saturday night at the hands of the Nebraska Cornhuskers on the road. Of course, that 39-38 thrilling victory for Nebraska. Interesting game. Very interesting game, to say the least, because there are multiple storylines and multiple takes that you can have when evaluating that game. Many fans out there will, of course, take the easy route and harp on the referee's blown call as the sole reason why Michigan State lost that game. While, in my opinion, more logical fans will take a look at the entire picture of that game and say Michigan State had multiple opportunities to just close it out. Secondary didn't play well. And there were times that, you know, in which Michigan State could have just stomped on the throat of the Cornhuskers. But that didn't just happen. You know, they let the door open, and Maryland was able to hang around and eventually pull out a thrilling win. So there have been many people out there that have said that Michigan State right now, concerning their college football playoff hopes, that those hopes are now in the trash. They are said and done. There is no way that the Spartans can now make a legit case to make the playoff, something that I totally disagree with. There is still a little bit of football left to be played. Again, Michigan State will take on Maryland, who is 0-5 in conference, 2-7 overall. They will play Maryland at home in a game that I think Michigan State will blow the Terrapins out in. And then after that, of course, we do know that Michigan State will move on to play probably the biggest game of the year against Ohio State on the road. Crazy atmosphere. And then they will close out things at home against Penn State on the 28th. So still some football left to be played. And certainly if Michigan State wants to make those hopes clearer when it comes to possibly making the playoff, they are going to need the help of other teams out there to knock off teams that may be in Michigan State's pathway. But it could get very interesting. But there are many that believe that, hey, if you lose to Nebraska on the road, there's no way you can make the college football playoff. There is absolutely no way the Spartans have a chance. So Coach D addressed all of that and more in an interesting presser. And what you just heard, actually, during that montage to start the show was Coach D'Antonio's thoughts on the situation out in Missouri. Of course, we documented it pretty extensively during yesterday's show, in which 30 members of the Missouri football team, including a few members of the assistant of the coaching staff for Missouri football, they joined in and decided, hey, we are not playing if our president does not step down. And the reason they decided to protest this was, of course, due to the multiple occurrences, racial occurrences, on Missouri's campus that they felt went with no attention from the upper echelons of Missouri. And it led to, you know, the president stepping down for Missouri. An interesting story. Interesting story, nonetheless, that has not only swept the world of our society, but also, of course, it has a direct correlation to the world of sports. And the president is Tim Wolf. He decided to resign. I watched a bit of his press conference yesterday as he addressed the media concerning the criticism that he has received when it comes to his handling of racial issues on that campus. And it was such a beautiful thing for me. And I gave a rant, a pretty impassioned rant on yesterday's show, which I believe we're going to post that segment of yesterday's show on our website later on today for those that didn't get a chance to hear it. But, you know, it gave me a good feeling because it gives you hope. Anytime you see a group of individuals band together for such a great cause like that and are able to directly affect change in that matter without having to get violent, without having to act a fool, doing it the right way, it gives you hope that, hey, our society gets it. Some of our society gets it, because far too often do we see negative press out there concerning racial situations. I don't need to go through the countless situations that we've seen in the past few years. But this was a situation that you can point at and say, okay, they saw a problem, society banded together, and they said that this is the way we're going to handle it, and it led to this solution. Very powerful stuff. I saw on ABC News a very interesting package on it more the student body there. And also got a shout out, you know, I kind of have a personal connection to this story because I saw last night, I was actually chatting with my fraternity brothers on an app called GroupMe, where we're all like in this group where you can just basically text message each other. But my fraternity, Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, the brothers on the Missouri campus, my frat brothers on that campus, they were pretty instrumental in making this movement happen. I actually saw one of my frat brothers on national TV this morning via CNN talking about how they organized things on that campus to get this done and to get this word out. So hats off to them, man. It just makes you feel good when you see something like that. But Coach D'Antonio addressed it, and you just heard his comments on it as he talked about how society is changing. When you have things like social media, where if you want to get a powerful message through the airwaves and out there to society, it's really easy to do it now because of social media and, you know, the power that sports has. I think that these 30 football players and members of this, the coaching staff of Missouri, them binding together really amped up this push because of their stance on campus. That football team gets a lot of press. They get a lot of press. They play in the SEC, for goodness sake. So when they had a stand like that and they decided to take a stand and say, hey, we're not playing, immediately we saw sports avenues, sports media outlets across the nation jump on this story. And that sort of attention, that also played a big hand in driving this as well. So hats off to Coach D'Antonio addressing that on today's presser. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We're taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m., just like we do each and every weekday here on our airwave. So let's dive into MSU football to start today's show. Again, the Spartans, 8-1 overall, 4-1 in conference play. They haven't lost in a long time, folks. A bit of an odd atmosphere on the road in Nebraska for Coach D'Antonio and company. And to start today's presser, Coach D'Antonio was asked about style points. Of course, when evaluating the college football playoff and evaluating and sort of diving into the minds of the 12-member selection committee, and I believe round two of the rankings come out tonight at 7 p.m. But when diving into what the committee looks at, when riddling down these top four and then all the way down to 25 teams, how much do style points come into play? And what style points are is how you look. How big of a margin, you know, do you blow out a team by? And how does that make your program look? And how much does that come into consideration when evaluating where a team is placed in those rankings? So Coach D'Antonio was asked about style points and whether or not, if he does have a lead on a team, will he continue to keep the foot on the gas, knowing how important style points are or how many people perceive style points to be in the minds of the committee? And here's what he had to say.
Well, you know, our first goal always is to win the football game. So after that, we're going to play until we're comfortable as best we can. Obviously, we've had a lot of close games. As well as last game, but I really haven't concerned myself with that. I sort of feel like if we win, good things happen. When you lose, negative things tend to happen. So we're just going to concentrate on trying to win a football game and not worry about the style points. I don't think we've ever piled it on a football team here, and that's not my intention. So.
You know, I'm conflicted about that bite because I get it. At the end of the day, it's about winning. Just win, baby. Just getting the dub. But I really feel as though that at the point where we are now in college football, where you have a selection committee and perception being reality, from week to week to week, when looking at how this committee votes on those top teams, you better believe that they do look at margin of victory, how you blow someone out. So I get where Coach D'Antonio was coming from. As long as you get the dub, everything is lollipops and rainbows. But If you do blow out, for instance, I don't mean to hurt Isaac's feelings here because he's a big LSU guy.
Whoa.
But wait.
There are so many other examples.
No, but this is the fresh example. This is coming off a week where this whole hoopla is real fresh in our minds. That Alabama and LSU game, you better believe that Alabama looks better blowing out LSU than just squeaking by with maybe a last-second drive to win the game. Am I right or am I wrong?
No, you're exactly right. I can't argue with that. TCU definitely looked like a bad opponent because Oklahoma State played so well this weekend. You're exactly right. That was a great example. Oklahoma State looked all the better because of their blowout win of TCU.
Well, and this is the thing for me.
Isn't that what you said?
No. The Alabama and LSU game. See, you're just completely ignoring what went down on Saturday. And I knew you were going to go that route too. But that's what it comes down to, how you blow out teams. So I'm conflicted with what Coach D'Antonio says there, because I don't know. I think behind closed doors, I do think that Coach D'Antonio, when he's by himself, I think he looks at how they win as well. It's hard not to when knowing that that's a big component to the conversation.
He definitely does. At the end of the day, you saw this last year when it played a part against the Michigan team who stuck a stake in the field. Yes, that was more about pride than style points. But part of that consideration is saying, well, hey, if we beat them by this much instead of only two touchdowns, that looks so much better for the committee, because last year was the first year of the playoffs. Then you look at the wins against Indiana, against Central, against, Air Force. Teams that really they pulled away from in the fourth quarter or in the third quarters, late in the second half. That's important to have that pulling away then instead of have the other team close the gap, because not everybody's watching a Michigan State game. What's important is the final score.
Right.
And that's what Michigan State needs to focus on. If they can beat a team by four touchdowns, they better do it. And also, if you don't worry about style points, sometimes the other team creeps in and, hey, once in a while, they'll score two consecutive touchdowns in 5 minutes and win the game.
Yeah, because D'Antonio, he said, I'm never the one to pile on points against another team. But sometimes when you do get a nice lead and you don't try to pile it on, you start playing real conservatively in a way. That mindset sort of shifts. So, but anyway, a lot of people have also harped on the coaching staff from Michigan State. The conservative play calling when it comes to the offense and not letting Connor Cook just go back in the pocket and just do his thing like a chicken wing on a string. And as far as the defense goes, Michigan State falling into that what prevent style defense, allowing those small dumps in a way, putting guys on islands at certain points. So an interesting question that Coach D also fielded was whether or not he has thought about or addressed the fact that, hey, the players have to go out there and execute. How much player responsibility is harped on in this whole loss as well?
No, from my perspective, I need to be able to, first of all, control myself. If I can't control myself, how can I ask our football team to control themselves? That's number one. Number two, you're always talking about life lessons to our football team and to our program that go beyond football. So I'm looking at how I react to that and how our team reacts to that. You're not going to win all the time. We haven't lost here in a year. Most people have lost in that time period at some point in time. So for a year, we've avoided that aspect of losing. Don't like it. It sort of eats at you, and you tend to really overanalyze and reanalyze everything that you do in a football game relative to that aspect. Why did we lose? That's one play. There were other opportunities to create seconds used. And there were other opportunities that we didn't make a play. So we all have to take responsibility in this. The people on the field, the people officiating, the coaches, everybody takes responsibility in winning and losing. And, there's some things I can control, and I've learned to deal with that and do my best. And there's other things that I have no control of, and I've learned how to deal with that. And I'll let somebody else worry about that aspect of it. And they've got that aspect to deal with, and that's their problem. And that's sort of the way I've approached it. And we've got to move on, and we've won an awful lot of close football games here. So we lost one. We let one get away from us that we should have had, in my perspective. With that said, you know, Nebraska did the job on their end to win that football game. And now we face a football team that has had, first of all, a very tough schedule. It's gone through a coaching change. Is got weapons, and William Likely, number four, great punt returner, kick returner, and a guy that they put over on offense from their corner position. They got a quarterback who runs the ball, in fact, very effectively. Some talented young wideouts, a great defensive end, and a defense that's been difficult to play against. And they've been in every football game they've been in. They've been in them, and they've lost at the end. So we face ourselves with another challenge. So we need to focus on that challenge and recognize that aspect and get ready to play, which we will.
And you know what? Coach D'Antonio also, he was asked a question really about when looking at this team, you know, this season and addressing the outside perception of where this team currently is. He in a way, kind of took a jab at the media, in a way. Take a listen to this one.
This team still controls its own destiny in the conference. Do you think people outside this program are losing sight of that, given the loss?
Well, it doesn't really matter what people outside are maintaining. It's what's on the inside to me that it matters. And that's what I have to control myself with. I come over here as a public responsibility, okay? But my main responsibility is over there with our football team. But I'm over here for your benefit.
Oh, I'm over here for your benefit. What do you think of that one?
No,
got a little hot in here.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. But at the same time, listen, I'm a journalism student here at Michigan State. You learn all the time. It's a mutual symbiotic relationship between the media and sports. I think the media is there for his benefit as well. I don't know about that one. I think that's being a little bit salty. I don't know about you, Al.
You could take that. You could take that the wrong way. Certainly, when you say I'm here,
not hard to misconstrue.
Right, I'm here for your benefit. I mean, I agree with you, Isaac. I think that it is a mutual relationship when it comes to the media and coverage of a respective team, and also vice versa when it comes to us putting out material for our listeners, for our readers, for our viewers at the same time. So because let's be real here. When it comes to driving attention to certain programs, it all comes down to how the media does that. So
it does.
I that kind of caught me off guard when I heard Coach D say that.
And Mark D'Antonio gets so much more positive press than negative press.
Certainly.
He's a winning coach, and therefore when he wins, he'll get all of the accolades, all of the awards. When he loses, that's what being a college coach at a big school where there are heavy expectations is.
Yeah,
you get
yeah.
criticized. You've got to be able to deal with it.
You do. And I think maybe that was a statement more so from maybe frustration of acquiring that first loss of the year. I don't know. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's go to our phone lines briefly here. We have on line one, our dear caller and friend of the show, my man Mike from Saginaw. Mike, how you doing, my man?
How you doing? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, brother.
And when Isaac told me, "Do you want what topic you want to talk about?" He said MSU football. I said, "Yes, I would like. I'll talk about MSU football." Here's a good question:
mm-hmm.
Why, when college team like a Michigan State or even Michigan loses, why it always the fans always pick on the play calling?
Well, I believe it's you know it mm-hmm. it comes down to the way the game is called. I do believe, and I've gone on record to say this multiple times throughout this season, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
I think that offensively, I don't believe that Warner, who's the offensive coordinator for MSU, I don't think that his play calling has always been a kumbaya relationship with Connor Cook, and really just getting everything out of a senior-laden quarterback with a lot of experience,
sure,
who is a proven winner for this team. I don't think that he's gotten as much as he could have gotten out of Cook so far up to this point of the year. Because I just think that the play calling has been a bit too conservative offensively for me. So I can see where the fans who say that statement, I can see where they're coming from, because I believe that sometimes you just need to let Cook do his thing.
Do you think that the offensive line, even though he's had a lot of injury, and that's what is affecting the play calling, too?
That helps as well. I mean, that's also a problem as well. I think anytime you have injuries to in any position, let alone the offensive line, who is in charge of protecting a quarterback like Connor Cook.
Sure.
And sometimes we see those collapses happen in the pocket where Cook is hurried into a sporadic decision. Certainly that comes into account as well. But there have been multiple times where Connor Cook has not even been given the chance to get into a groove because the play calling just hasn't allowed him to do that.
But do you think a lot of teams, what a lot of college team is doing now, is they years ago they used to just hand the ball back to the running back or run screen passes. This is just a lot of college coach offensive coordinators, all they doing is throwing the ball out to the closest sideline and let the lineman go out there and block, and then the play evolve and develop from outside of the box there.
Yeah, well, I think that in any offense, Mike, you have to have balance. If you're going to win, you got to have balance. You got to have a good run game as well as a good arsenal through the air as well. And I think Michigan State has done a pretty good job for the most part of having that balance. We've seen the running back core, guys like Madre London and L.J. Scott and even Delton Williams from time to time, be able to find holes in their respective defenses and be able to really do some great things on the ground. And we've seen at times where, you know, if the ground game isn't working, we've seen Connor, you know, forced into a situation in which he has to make plays happen down the field.
But
I think you gotta have balance though, Mike.
Do you think the way the offenses are set up more, it's more like a back then, I'm talking about 20, 30 years ago, where they just went out and they just have two back in the eye, and the quarterback hikes, and he just put the ball underneath the tailback's waist and stomach and let him run through the line. But it's not like that anymore. It's like the quarterbacks are getting back. They taking two-step drops and throwing the ball outside to the side, close to the sideline, and let the play develop from there. It's like I know that the linebackers are much more athletic and the safeties are much more athletic than ever, and there's a lot more blitzing going on. All this, it's just like the game is evolving so much that it's the quarterback, there's more and more pressure on these quarterbacks now. They have to be passers now, and they have to be so athletic in college, especially they want the quarterbacks to run from sideline to sideline. As I see this game is evolving and stuff, it's not like the quarterback position is not being coached like it was years ago. What's your opinion on it?
No, I agree. I think the game is evolving, and we've seen at the next level quarterbacks who are in a system where they are not just sitting in the pocket anymore. Pocket passers, I think that there are still many pocket passers in the game today that are successful. Mm-hmm. But it helps when you can have that dual threat, when the pocket does collapse, that you can trust that quarterback to get the job done on his feet. And Connor Cook has shown multiple times throughout this year, especially on those short yardage situations where if his team needs to pick up 2 yards in a third down situation, if there is nothing down the field, you'll see Connor Cook just say, hey, I'm taking this thing myself and I'm picking up this yardage. But, yeah, the game is evolving. And I do believe that teams who do have a mobile type of a quarterback who can get it done on the ground as well as through the air with their arm, when you have a quarterback like that, it does give you a bit of an edge because it doesn't confine you to just sitting in the pocket and just evaluating what the defense gives you. I agree, Mike.
Think about on the next level, when they do get to the next level, a lot of them, like Robert Griffin, Johnny Manziel, Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo. I'm talking about not just your conventional pocket passing quarterback. These guys are mobile, but on the next level, it's like their arm strength is they can't get the ball from sideline to sideline.
I think it depends on the quarterback. Depends on the quarterback. We've seen some quarterbacks succeed in that, and we've seen some quarterbacks, you know, just fail. A perfect example of that. Of a quarterback who has failed, who when he first came out, everybody was really high on him. Of course, you know what the name I'm going to say is Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick is a guy, a dual threat guy, who can burn you with his feet. But when it comes to his arm and accuracy, it just hasn't been there. So you got to have both if you want to succeed. You can't just be a guy that when the pocket collapses, you're just running each and every time because injuries happen, as we all know. and you have to be able to evaluate a defense. That's big.
What about Mark Leiner from USC? He won the Heisman Trophy and everything, but the deal about it is he couldn't make it on the next level. It seems to me that if you the quarterback from KC, Allen, I think that's his, not Allen, but the quarterback, he was drafted number one
Alex
overall
Smith.
In the draft
yeah,
and
Alex
everything.
Smith. Yeah,
Alex Smith. Yeah, and I'm looking at the quarterback position in Detroit, even Stafford and everything. I don't. The idea of it is the quarterback position. If these offenses and these coordinators are going to depend so much on the quarterback, you're going to just have to build up a line around them or get some good running backs or get a great tight end and block and be able to develop and be able to run a conservative offense. But right now, these coordinators, they're just holding these quarterbacks back, and that's what I like to – Like, just to stay on air.
Yeah, and it depends on the coach, I think. It depends on the system that you're operating in. Mike, appreciate the call, my man.
Thank you.
All right, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break here. I can't believe it's already 1:36 now. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, I want to play two more bites from the Coach D'Antonio press conference. Then we'll dive into the Pistons. We'll talk a bit about the MSU men's basketball team, all of that and so much more. Do not touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. So I want to play just two bites from the MSU football presser. We played a few for you, but I think these are pretty important as the team moves on now to take on Maryland this Saturday. So here's Coach D on what he believes the response from his team will be when they move on to Maryland this weekend.
Yeah, you know, we're going to analyze why we lost that football game, and certainly the two-minute situation entered into it, as well as some other plays throughout the game. We're going to address those issues and look in depth at those issues and try and correct them, or just correct them. But that doesn't mean they won't repeat themselves. But we're going to make sure that we do everything we can to evaluate why did we win, why do we lose, and let's be on the winning side of things. Continue to talk to our players about handling their situations and playing well and also reasserting themselves as leaders. You know, life's not going to always go like this. You're going to have some down times. And as I told them on Sunday, if they thought that was a bad situation and a tough deal, they should have been here in 2011 at the Big Ten Championship game. That was a tough one. And we went to a banquet the next day. But we got off our back and played well and won it to beat Georgia in, what, triple overtime? So, you know, hopefully these things are life lessons, as I said.
So there's been a lot of chatter out there that with the loss to Nebraska, many people feel as though Michigan State, there is no way, shape, or form that they can make the college football playoff. Here was Coach D'Antonio's response on that.
No, as I said, I think I guess – we're pretty spoiled around here at this point, but that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing, all right? But we lost one football game. So, and it's there's a lot to play for. And as I told our players on Sunday, as I was in my closet, my wife washed my clothes for me. And so I was putting clothes on a hanger and hanging them up. Okay, and it just so happened I picked up a Rose Bowl shirt, put it on a hanger. I said, oh, we were 13-1 that year. And when I picked up, I said, oh, here's a Cotton Bowl shirt. I hung that on a thing. Well, we were 11-2. And we ended up number 5 in the nation. We ended up number 3 in the nation. But when you get to that point, sometimes that's not good enough anymore. It's not good enough for us. That's why I said to reach higher. Because you're always trying to go somewhere you haven't been. And so that's what we're trying to do. And that's what this program should try and do. But let's not be naive either. Other people out there have good programs, well-established programs, players on scholarship, good coaches, And they have drive, too, and they're playing for something as well. And, you know, I've watched Nebraska from afar. They've lost some tough games. So they won one and say they should be congratulated for that. But under no circumstances, you know, are we washed up out of town, you know. So we've got a lot to play for here. So I don't know what we'll be ranked or anything like that. But right now we're number two in the conference and with an opportunity to play our way to number one. That's all I can tell you.
Now, Isaac, you and I had an interesting conversation right before we took the airways because you looked at me and said, Al, Coach D'Antonio just called the fan base spoiled. Now, I said that, hey, wait until you hear the context that Coach D'Antonio put this conversation into because it ain't what it seems. When you read a headline, Coach D'Antonio calls fan base spoiled, you immediately as a fan can have the response or may have the response as, oh, what is he talking about? What, spoiled? Ah, that sounds bad. But after hearing that, does your mind change?
Yeah, 100%. Because, you know, I'm a student. I've got 20 credits. I work a few jobs. And I can't always make those press conferences. So when I get the notification on my phone from Bleacher Report, which says college football, it says, let me find it for you. It says, head coach Mark D'Antonio downplays loss to Nebraska. I guess we're pretty spoiled here. We lost one game. That makes it seem like he's accusing the fans. That's not what he's saying whatsoever. He says, hey, we've had a great run. We've been successful. Trust in the team then, trust in it now. This is 100% different. So when you, I'm happy we got the full context surrounding this because, yeah, D'Antonio, that was a great answer to a tough question. Not a question which was accusatory of the fans whatsoever. Yeah, so ignore the headlines whenever you see that. It's just... That's trying to get clicks. That's what it is.
That's all it is. Sometimes the media just, they hit on those buzzwords during a press conference or an interview, and you have this perception that isn't even true. I thought Coach D handled the press conference very well. So, again, Michigan State, they will be at home against Maryland this weekend. It is a noon game. Thank goodness for media members like myself. I'll probably be leaving the stadium around at least 3 o'clock. I don't have to be there all night, seeing as though it isn't a night game. But anyway, they take on Maryland, 12 p.m. game. Michigan State, 8-1, 4-1 overall. All right, before we hit our second break here, I wanted to bring up the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons fell to the Golden State Warriors last night, 109-95 in the Ruckus Arena, the Oracle Arena out in Oakland, California. The Warriors are playing some of the best basketball I have ever seen in my entire life. I mean, oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff right now. 8-0, 5-0 at home. The Pistons, though, I will say, they put up a valiant effort throughout that game. I stayed up and watched every single quarter, every single minute of every single moment of that game. And the Pistons stuck with the Warriors throughout much of that game. Even when they got into an early deficit, double-digit deficit, they clawed their way back. But there were a few things that were a bit troubling and a few mistakes that you just can't make against the Golden State Warriors if you do expect to possibly win against this juggernaut of a team. And number one being turnovers. You cannot turn the ball over against the Golden State Warriors because if you do, those turnovers will most likely lead to easy transition buckets for the Golden State Warriors down the stretch of the game. And that's exactly what happened. The Pistons had 20 turnovers overall. Looking at, you know, who had the most turnovers between the guards, Reggie Jackson, who I still will say this, even though Reggie Jackson had an unbelievable quarter against Portland, he's a scoring juggernaut. But Reggie Jackson is still learning how to be a pure point guard in today's NBA and still struggling to find that balance as to when to score and when to get his teammates involved. I saw multiple times throughout that game, Reggie Jackson playing one-on-one ball, playing bully ball, and just saying, give me the ball, I'm going to try to make something happen. He went up in that paint, he got double-teamed and threw up just nonsense. And then even when he decides to go up in the paint and try it again, when he was stopped in his tracks, he had no other choice but to pass the basketball. And we all know that Golden State is so good defensively that they play those passing lanes so well, and he just threw the ball away. So he had six turnovers. So you had six turnovers from Reggie Jackson alone. You had four from Andre Drummond. But then looking at the bench production, you have to have depth if you're going to beat the Warriors. Detroit's bench gave them nothing last night, with the exception of Stanley Johnson. Stanley Johnson had 20 points, probably his best, arguably his best game as a Piston so far. He was 9 for 14 from the field, 2 for 4 from three-point range. He played within himself. He had a pretty solid game. But other than that, you get 2 points from Aaron Baines. You get no points from Anthony Tolliver. You get no points from Reggie Bullock. Again, Steve Blake was just terrible. He had 5 turnovers, only 5 points from him. And it was just, if the Pistons would have got more production from that second team coming in the game, then you would have seen a bit of a different result. And Reggie Jackson was hurt in that game. To start the fourth quarter, they went with their second group, and that just further just damaged them. And the Pistons couldn't crawl themselves out of that hole. They could not contain the Warriors once that second group came in. And once the first group came in, minutes after that, it was just kind of too big of an uphill battle to climb. But much props to the Warriors. They played outstanding. Steph Curry is still playing out of his mind. And I thought overall the Pistons did a relatively great job against a player who has been throwing up 40 points here, 30 points there. He was limited to only 22. That's saying a lot against Steph Curry, okay? If you can limit him to 22 points, you've done your job. But it was just too much depth for the Warriors against the Pistons last night, Isaac.
Yeah, sure was. And you mentioned it. You hit right on it. Steph Curry has been averaging about 36 points per game going into this game. And the Pistons limited him to 22 points on 7 of 18 shooting. That's a great team effort, because the one thing you noticed about Stan Van Gundy, it's team defense. It's helping over those picks, which we saw so many teams. They don't know what to do. They switch off. You saw the Pistons just play those pick and rolls perfectly. Also, we'd be remiss if we did not mention the name of somebody who's been putting up the best statistical season for a center since I don't even know when. Shaq, maybe?
Yeah.
You can make that debate. Andre Drummond.
Right.
He has been fantastic. He was fantastic again. 20 points, 15 rebounds, or 14 points, 15 rebounds, excuse me. And he shut down Festus Ezeli, the Warriors' starting center. And I stumbled upon this on Twitter. Andre Drummond has a Twitter page counting his rebounds. Counting his rebounds. The Twitter page, the only post it has are 1, 2, 3, 4. And this season it's gone up to 29, of course. Andre Drummond averaging 19 points a game.
Yeah.
19.4, 19.6 rebounds. He's the anchor of this team.
Yeah, he certainly is. And entering last night's game, he was averaging 20.3 points and 20.3 rebounds right on the nose. 20.3 and 20.3. And he is one of only three players to average 20 and 20 through the first six games of the NBA year, dating all the way back to, of course, only two guys who have done that in NBA history other than Andre, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Wilt Chamberlain. Unbelievable numbers. In our second break, when we come back, we will chat about the MSU men's basketball team and briefly hit on high school football. Of course, we enter week 3 of the high school football playoff season this Friday. You don't want to miss that, folks. 10 minutes left. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports. The MSU men's basketball team in action last night. They have now finished up exhibition play. They get a 93-57 win over Ferris State. So now they move on and look forward to the start of the regular season now. Can't believe it. It's already that time of the year. Can you believe that? Crazy, crazy stuff. And, of course, this Friday, they will open the year officially versus Florida Atlantic at the Breslin Center. But looking at last night's game, it was an interesting one. And again, this is I like, you know, when Michigan State plays these exhibition games, because it just gets their feet wet. It gets them back into basketball mode. They can iron out some things. Tom Izzo loves to experiment with different lineups, to play with different, you know, things here and there to see what guys have chemistry on the court and what lineup works for, you know, against what type of defense here and there. And MSU combined for a 56.5 field goal percentage, including 42.9% from beyond the arc, as 13 of 15 Spartans scored in the contest. And somebody who I've been really impressed with so far, again, it's just exhibition play, so take this with 50 bags of salt, but Bryn Forbes has played pretty well. Bryn Forbes, a guy who in his first year with the team last year, and a guy who Coach Tom Izzo harped on tremendously to try and get the best out of Bryn that he could. Bryn Forbes, we all know about, you know, his well-documented offseason, and once you put on 15 pounds of muscle, it's clear to see that. So he's gained some strength. But, you know, the worry with guards who put on that amount of muscle in that short period of time is whether or not, if they are a great shooter entering that weight gain, whether or not their shot will change. Because we've seen players over the years that put on that muscle, their shot struggles because they don't know how to deal with the sudden amount of muscle that they have when they're putting up jump shots left and right. It has not affected Bryn Forbes, at least right now. We're seeing no signs of that. We watched him in the Moneyball summer tournament as well. He looked good there. He was 4-for-7 from three-point range last night, and he led the team in scoring with 16 points. So we all know Bryn Forbes can certainly shoot the rock, and you have to be able to hit the outside J or the three-pointer in today's basketball because there are so many teams that can do that. You got to be able to shoot well, and Bryn Forbes shows that he can do that. Bryn Forbes, for me, is an interesting guy because I wonder whether or not Bryn Forbes is going to be a weapon when it comes to driving the basketball to the hoop. And whether or not Michigan State would even need him to do that because they have a lot of guards that can penetrate. Lou Ross, Tum-Tum Naren Jr. is a guy who can find the paint. Denzel Valentine is a guy who has shown over the years that he's added the jumper to his game, but he can also take you off the dribble to the paint as well when to draw fouls and get to the line. So I wonder whether or not Bryn Forbes will be a threat, Isaac, when it comes to driving the basketball. But the bigger question is, do they even need him to do that? Do they need him just kind of paint, you know, just stay out of the paint and just kind of nail those jumpers like we've seen in the first two games of the exhibition year?
Well, I think we'll see Bryn Forbes assume a more versatile and more multidimensional role than we did last year. Tum-Tum Naren's ineffectiveness when it comes to actually scoring the ball was ever more apparent as the year drew on. Teams would just sag off 5-10 feet from him, which really clogs down the lane. So I think you'll see a lot of Denzel Valentine at the one. I think you'll see a lot of Bryn Forbes at the one. I think you'll see a lot of Tum-Tum too. But at the same time, I think Bryn Forbes will play a point guard / shooting guard, one of those 1-2 combo roles. And I think we can see him penetrate a lot. We saw it in the Moneyball League, as you mentioned. He's gotten so much faster, so much more explosive. He's got some new hops to display. And, yeah, I think we'll see him drive a lot. Now, do they need him to? Yes, I actually think they do. I think Aaron Harris and Bryn Forbes and Denzel Valentine will all need to drive a little bit more to welcome Matt McQuaid, who's looked phenomenal.
Great.
From beyond the arc. He's been as sharp of a shooter as any of us expected. So, yeah, I think the more driving to the lane from those players, the more that will open up the court for Matt McQuaid. And having a spot-on set shooter is so valuable for a team.
What I really like about Matt McQuaid is that not only can he hit that jumper, he was 2-of-4 from distance on his way to 9 points, but the kid can ball when it comes to just his court vision is off the charts. I mean, he had 8 assists without turning the ball over once. That's big, and that's very, very valuable when you have a young kid like that who can come in and manage a game and give guys like Denzel Valentine and Tum-Tum that much-needed rest, and you don't see a dip in the efficiency of the team once that happened. So Matt McQuaid was very, very impressive. I was also impressed that when looking at making the extra pass, Michigan State was pretty efficient in that regard as well. They combined for 29 assists on 35 made baskets. And 20 of Michigan State's total came in transition. That's pretty impressive. So this team can also run, something that Coach Tom Izzo wanted to see from his Spartans much more last year as well. So we saw some great things during exhibition play, and, you know, now the real season starts. You've seen different lineups. Time has seen different lineups. He's experimented here and there. Now I think this team is really ready to get this ball rolling to see how they stack up against some of the best in the nation. So very fun stuff. Also, folks, to close out the show, I want to talk about briefly high school football. Again, I believe it's like 8 local teams left in Michigan that are competing and can still make a strong case to be in that number at Ford Field to win a state championship. One of those teams being Lansing Catholic. I was actually at the Lansing Catholic and Portland game, and we interviewed Jim Ahern and John Navarra right after that matchup. Lansing Catholic actually pulling out that win. Here's what Jim Ahern and John had to say after that game.
I think they have a football team, and they played exceptionally well that night. We didn't, and they dominated us that game. Maybe woke us up a little bit. We had to make some changes. It's hard for me to do as a coach. I don't like doing that. We had to make some changes on personnel and move some people around, and that's helped us. And defensively, our kids have just been playing great the last few weeks. Football-wise, that's a hell of an offense. They run there. They're just like a machine. Monroe St. Mary's is very difficult to stop. I was really proud of our kids when we dropped the ball down there, fumbled it, and gave it to them on about the 10 or whatever that was, and held them. That was huge, obviously. So there's a lot of things different, but I think the biggest is that we've grown up a little bit, and then we didn't have some big penalties tonight. I don't like to look at it as revenge. I have a lot of respect for John and his program. And I just wish we didn't have to play so early. We knock each other off, it seems like, almost every season that we're in this thing. And it'd be nice if we could play somebody from someplace else, meet them down the road a little bit. I just feel really happy that we obviously have improved since the first time. We didn't make the same mistakes.
All teams playing together, and it's a shame somebody has to go home.
John, forgive me, this already been asked, but looking at the first game compared to this game, what adjustments did you see Lansing Catholic make in this matchup tonight?
Well, I felt like they just didn't run Tony as much in the first game. I think they were saving him a little bit during the season so he didn't have to take so many shots. And now it's the playoffs, and he's going to carry the football. He's going to have it in his hands. And he just ran the ball a lot more against us tonight. And I think it was smart on their point and on their part because, save him during the season. Don't let him run the football so much because I think he got dinged up a little bit last year. I think he's healthy now, and you're going to see a lot of heavy dose of him.
John, really an incredible ride even to just get to this point of the year. I know it's tough to address the team after a loss like this, but what did you tell your team, and how do you put a cap on this year for them?
I just told them I'm very proud of them. I mean, we went from a 4-5 team to a state champion contender, and they did that. That was all because of their hard work and their efforts.
Yeah, so that was just a bit of a snippet from our post-game coverage from Lansing Catholic top in Portland in that district title game last week Friday. Much thanks to Jim Ahern and John Navarra for their time after that matchup. Again, Portland had actually beat Lansing Catholic earlier on in the season, and Lansing Catholic with a bit of a revenge, even though Jim Ahern didn't like to use that word after the game. We'll have more on that tomorrow's show. But thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic afternoon. And as always, be easy, people.